Hi, and welcome to Emetophobia Help. I'm Anna Christie, recovered emetophobic and licensed psychotherapist specializing in emetophobia. These podcasts have a trigger warning of words associated with emetophobia. If you enjoy these podcasts or you find them helpful, you can buy me a coffee. Just scroll down in the notes, click on the link, and for a couple of bucks, you can support the podcast. So season four, here we go. Hi, everyone, and welcome back. I'm here with Sakina from Maryland in the United States. Hi, Sakina. How are you?
Fine, Anna. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. Thank you so much for hanging in there with me. I had 2.5 weeks of a crazy computer. I don't even know what to call it, but it was unavailable. I was unavailable, put it that way. So,
no problem.
Yeah. So, tell us a bit about yourself, if whatever you feel comfortable sharing.
Okay. I'm in Maryland. This is where I've been living for many years. Was born in Georgia. Raised in Detroit, Michigan, and I went to college at Howard University in Washington, D.C.
Nice.
Majored in psychology, went to graduate school at the University of Miami in Florida, came back to Howard for internship, and I've pretty much been here ever since.
Oh, wow.
Early 1990s.
Yeah, since the 1990s. So
okay.
Yeah, that's a fair bit of time. So you've traveled around to some of the interesting places in America, all on the East Coast, pretty much. Detroit.
Yes.
Detroit's kind of, you know, more
Midwest.
Yeah, I guess it is. Mm-hmm. I don't think of it that way because being from Canada, I used to live in Ontario and I had relatives in Detroit and we used to drive down there just on a weekend from where we were. So I always think of it as north, but it's more that part of Ontario. South. I'm boring everyone with my geography. Okay, so tell us about your story with emetophobia. Yes.
I think I became aware of a fear of vomiting probably in my teenage years, certainly by high school. But I don't think it became a phobia until college. And I think just being away from home and not dealing well with the transition and already having social anxiety and, you know, sort of the fear of vomiting in general and some disgust mixed in there. And somehow it became a phobia. And thankfully, I had two wonderful graduate students. So one semester, I saw one grad student. The next one, I saw another grad student. And they took me through a lot of CBT and I guess ERP. Maybe they didn't call it that at the time.
Right. Yeah.
And they brought me a long way. And that was in the early 1980s. So at that time, with one of the therapists, we were going to try to make me throw up or something.
Right.
By having me smell ammonia or something like that.
Oh, gosh.
She was on the phone with me. I was home in my bathroom and I was just like, it's not working. I can't do it. And she said, it's fine. And I was pretty much okay for a long time after that. So early 1980s, most of early adulthood, graduate school, and then around 2011, the phobia sort of kicked up a notch.
Okay.
I had my special needs sister with me from 2011 to about 2016, and she frequently threw up as a child. She's only a year younger than I am.
Right.
So I think a lot of the phobia sort of stemmed from her frequent illness as a child and my mom's not having the best response to it.
Oh,
and
okay.
So I did everything in my power to make sure that wasn't going to be me. And I think that's sort of where the fear really came from. And then it reemerged around 2011. And then only in the last couple of years did I actually go back for some specific ERP therapy. I just ended that last October. Got to be cost prohibitive.
Yeah.
So, but I think I came a long way with that therapist. And he said his goal with me, he said my goal should be not 100% mastery.
Mm-hmm.
So I would feel like I'm recovering,
right,
not completely fearless. So even when I feel a bit nauseous now, I can feel that I'm a bit fearful, but I'm not an eight or
right
something really high on the SUD scale.
Yeah, yeah.
And more like a three or five or something like that.
Right, yeah. So just for our listeners who may not be familiar, a SUDS scale, it's S-U-D-S, and it stands for Subjective Units of Distress Scale. So, and we often have, some people use 1 to 10. I usually use 0 to 10 when I'm, but yeah, 10 is the worst panic possible, you know, and 0 is nothing, of course. Being calm.
And even with my ERP exposure and response prevention, and I am a psychologist, I think I mentioned that to you. I never really got higher than an 8, and that was only a couple of times. So there were some videos I was looking at, and drank some old chocolate milk from the refrigerator, and I was a little bit panicked about that, but I never really got higher than an 8. And most of the time I could sort of hover in that 5 or less range where I felt the fear was manageable.
Yeah. Yeah. 8 is pretty high to tolerate, but sometimes you can't, some people can, and sometimes, you know, you can kind of, I know when I, for myself, if I got up to 8, I would start to maybe dissociate a little bit. Like if I wasn't, I don't know, everything wasn't real or whatever. And 9 and 10 were completely unmanageable. But but it's good if you can get to 8 and still have your wits about you.
Yeah, I was flooded a bit, I think, because it was sort of unintentional with the chocolate milk.
Okay.
One that happened in the session, and, you know, I think just my therapist being there and sort of talking to me, and I did feel a bit lightheaded.
Right.
And it got down to, say, 6 and then 5, and we just held in there until it felt manageable.
Yeah. Yeah, good for you. Good for you all of, you know, keeping sort of at this. What sort of psychology do you practice?
Okay, clinical psychology, mostly seeing people who have depression or anxiety. I do not treat emetophobia. In fact, I don't think I've ever had any in my practice. There was one woman who maybe said she was a little hyper aware if she was at a function, say a sporting event, and maybe there were drunk people around her, but she, and I would have referred her if I felt she had emetophobia. So I generally work with adults, mostly women, who have depression, anxiety, some history of trauma, as long as it's not too severe to the point that they're dissociating or they have, say, borderline personality disorder, things a little bit out of, because I'm in private practice and I'm trying to keep things relatively even keel with my caseload now that I can pick my clients.
I get you. Yeah. And I would certainly refer anyone that had a lot of what you've just listed, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't treat depression, and I never have. Not personality disorders or whatever either. But I'm kind of interested in, let me just ask you this, and if you don't want to answer, it's fine. Mm-hmm. And I can always cut this out. Is there a reason why you don't treat emetophobia? Because you understand it, obviously.
Mm-hmm. I don't feel I have sufficient mastery of it myself. Okay. And even though I have come a very long way, mm-hmm. It's also just something I'm probably not as interested in because I deal with other sorts of anxiety, not even phobias so much. It's more generalized anxiety. Right. Because I deal with generally fairly successful people who mm-hmm. are working and, you know, have businesses you know, they're always often worried about things. Right. What if?
Right.
Dealing with relationship issues. And so I think because I don't feel maybe I have sufficient mastery of my own emetophobia that I would want to have a practice.
Right.
Yeah, like yourself.
Yeah. Well,
everyone
and that's totally fair because I was really interested in becoming a therapist for a long time in my life, but I wouldn't do it because of this phobia that I had. And I used to think I was crazy because there was no internet and I didn't know any other people that had it. So I really thought that I was not a stable enough character or whatever to be a therapist. So it wasn't until I got over the emetophobia that I started working on. I mean, I had quite a few of the credits and so on that you need for it beforehand, but then went back to school for a few years. So anyway, I get that. That's totally, it's about your own integrity as well as just areas of interest,
Right.
And you talked about yourself having social anxiety at one point. Do you think that was 100% related to fearing vomiting in public or in front of someone else, or were there other aspects of it?
It was mostly just being a shy person. Just being born that way, and then not having a lot of being raised in an environment where we were pretty sheltered, and college was my first opportunity to be away from mom, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I realized like I had a lot of work to do to learn how to talk to people and feel comfortable in social situations. And I'm still always nervous.
Nervous
right now.
So
I'm glad it's just audio and not.
Definitely. Me video. Too. Mm-hmm. Just audio. That's right.
But the throwing up in public is part of the emetophobia.
Right.
There was an article I read a while ago. I can't remember the author now, but he talked about the different aspects of why some people's emetophobia is worse in some situations than others. So being embarrassed if I were to do that in public, that's part of it. Mm-hmm. But just the physical act of being sick and fears of what's the other parts of it? There's the disgust piece. Mm-hmm. I'm quite OCD, so there's that part of it. But the social anxiety is just, I'm a shy person in general, and I do what I have to do socially, and I fake it till I make it, and then I get home or get by myself and just collapse.
Yeah.
And even in my work, I don't work with groups anymore.
Okay.
But after seeing a number of clients in a day, I need time to just decompress.
Yes. Yeah. So part of that might be having more of an introverted personality, right? Where you kind of get less energy from being around other people, you know?
And very introverted.
Extroverted people like me, I get more energy from being around other people. So,
And I think I'm an INTJ on the Myers-Briggs.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the very rare introverted types.
INTP is the one that it's not theoretically possible. I'm making in-jokes. If you're not familiar with Myers-Briggs, then go ahead and Google it. Take a little test. They're all free online. They're kind of fun. I'm an ENFJ, which is an extroverted, intuitive, feeling judger. So they call us the protagonist or the charismatic teacher. I like that one because that describes me. Charismatic. I'm more sensitive to other people's feelings. It's not that I make decisions necessarily based on my feelings, but I can kind of sense other people's feelings and stuff.
So I'm very thinking and judging.
Yeah. So my son-in-law, who lives here with us with his wife, my daughter, and her kids, he's a teacher. He thinks it's all Myers-Briggs is all bunk. So if you're listening and you think that, that's okay. There's no problem. But yeah, I find it really interesting. It helps to understand other people, and anything that helps me understand other people, I kind of like that. So social anxiety. Yeah. Some people, the reason I asked you, I think, is because some people with emetophobia, you know, social anxiety is part of the differential diagnosis. Like it could be, you know, and they get diagnosed with social anxiety, with generalized anxiety, and sometimes they don't have any of that. They only have emetophobia, a specific phobia of vomiting, and that means they don't want to be out in social situations because they're afraid that they will vomit. So it's not. But what you're describing is more of a correct diagnosis of it, because there are so many facets to social anxiety, and much more than just being afraid of throwing. I think I have a bit of that. If I have any emetophobia left, it's that I don't want to throw up in public. And I'm fine if I'm out in public because I don't believe I'm sick unless I actually am. But if I really am sick, I don't want to be around anybody else. Even in the hospital, you know, I wake up from surgery. And to me, that's being in public. And I didn't like that at all. But, you know, so we all have little bits and pieces and some things kind of left over. Do you feel as though now you can manage, like, would you say you would actually fit a diagnosis of emetophobia anymore?
Yes. Probably on the lower end. And even when I went into my intense therapy in the past year, I started out way ahead of the game. So I can say vomit. I can see the word vomit. But seeing pictures, you know, I was having to, the cartoons, not so bad. And so I went through all the steps of exposures. But I think I still have it because I can be around if other people throw up. Hasn't happened recently. But it's more about myself, I think. Just the idea that it's been a long time. And I know, I think too many of the safety behaviors have been ingrained. I'm doing a lot better with those where I'm not checking as much or disinfecting as much, but I was doing this for so long, 50 years pretty much. Well, not 50 years, but the last time I threw up, I was 10. And now I'm almost 62.
Holy, you look young.
Thank you.
Yeah, you do. I thought you were like 42, yeah, honestly.
Oh, I wish.
Not 60. I don't know. I don't make stuff like that up. No, you look fabulous.
Thank you.
For your age.
I've been nauseated many times. Mm-hmm. And I think the last time I probably almost threw up was at age 17, but I wasn't afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And then at age 26 or so, hungover, drinking too much.
Right.
Very nauseated, had dry heaves. Mm-hmm. So I was okay then. So somehow, somewhere between the late 20s and 2011, the fear just sort of reemerged.
It does that, you know, because it's the avoidance. And the problem with emetophobia is you're not avoiding it on purpose. It's not like avoiding dogs, you know, and you're not going to go to the pound or to a dog show or something. It's avoidance by just nature. We don't vomit very often as adults. Especially, I think people with emetophobia, this was part of a study that was done by David Veal and some other colleagues that either, like, we don't vomit as often as the average person. The control group of people without emetophobia, but there hasn't been enough research, so we don't know whether that's because we have emetophobia, or is it, you know, is it sort of the other way around, that we have emetophobia because such long time goes in between. You know, my daughter who lives here throws up many times a year, like for whatever reason, and so does my niece, who's just turned 50, you know, I don't know. These are the people that I, and so I think, oh, well, I'm not doing anything to avoid it on purpose now, but I haven't thrown up since 2010. That's a long time, I think. Anyway, so a long time goes in between. And then if anything makes a phobia worse, it's avoidance.
And I had to list a lot of the things that I was doing in my last therapy that were considered safety behaviors or avoidance.
Right.
And so gradually over time, I have given up some of those. And one thing my therapist, former therapist, said was, everything's contaminated. So it's this idea that I have of my OCD, I think, also that has contributed to the phobia. I would say, yes, I still have it, but it's much better. I'm still probably going to be afraid, but I used to not watch movies. I didn't watch The Exorcist for a long time.
Yeah, it's not worth it. Okay.
I was able to do all those things. I'm able to do all those now. See someone throw up in a movie.
Right,
On camera, not the... In a movie theater.
Right.
I'm still kind of a germaphobe, and COVID did not help that at all.
No, it didn't help anybody, honestly.
And I'm pretty much a homebody anyway, so a lot of those things, I think, got reinforced.
The safety behaviors and the avoidance, those are really key. You know, if people are listening and they're trying to kind of go on their own to work on this phobia, you know, make a list of everything you do that you think keeps you safe from vomiting. And I can pretty much tell you none of that keeps you safe from vomiting. Like, because you can vomit for any reason at any time. And I think that's why your therapist said everything's contaminated, because it is. And and it's really pretty hard to... I mean, you can have normal hygiene, wash your hands like a normal amount in a day, under 10 times a day. and that's okay, because then you won't catch colds and the flu and COVID and all that as easily. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're chewing gum and sipping water and taking ginger tea and tablets and all kinds of Pepto-Bismol and, oh, gosh, I mean, I have a big long list. And my clients.
I did that a lot in college.
Yeah.
Yeah, in high school.
Yeah. So not so much anymore, though. So you're able to give those things up. That's good.
No, I mean, ginger is good just Sometimes if I have an upset stomach, not because I think I'm going to throw up, but just right. indigestion. Mm-hmm. And I have GERD, acid reflux disease. Yeah. So a lot of that played into it. And maybe inadvertently, I think I was listening to one of your podcasts from last year. I think you were talking to another clinician who treats emetophobics and was saying somehow that sometimes well-meaning parents inadvertently sort of make the problem worse by reassurance. And my mom took me to doctors because of my nervous stomach. That's what it was called.
And fair enough, which is a real condition, you know, like if you're nervous and if you're anxious, then your digestion's going to slow down. If you're panicking, it's going to stop. And that feels quite nauseating. So that's a feedback loop or whatever, catch-22, you know, with having emetophobia, because then that feeling of being nauseous, then that makes you more anxious, and then it goes around and around and around. So,
And my mom did all those things for me, but my sister with special needs, she wasn't as patient with her, and I never understood that till I got a little bit older and had my own therapy, and people were like, your mom's pretty narcissistic and your sister's not perfect.
Sorry, I'm just waving my granddaughter out off. So, and you were looking after your sister for a time, you said.
Yes. Yeah. She was, the sister who was looking after her before me was having some financial problems and some things were going on. So we thought it was going to be temporary, like a few months in 2011, and it ended up being 5 years. Wow. And then my mom said, oh, you've done a good job. You know, she can come back with me now.
Okay.
And so in 2016, at Christmas time, we did the handoff, and less than a year later, she was back with my other sister who had her before, who's in a better situation at that time. But yeah, my mom does
so
not
your mom
have
really
much
couldn't.
Patience.
Okay. No. And that, I think that makes a difference too, like growing up, if our moms were not really emotionally available to us, I think that that comes out in all sorts of ways in our adult life. And one of those ways is emetophobia. I mean, it doesn't really, I always say it doesn't matter why you got emetophobia or how you got it, because the treatment is the same and the recovery path is the same. So, but it's always interesting to explore. We have nothing but time and money to do that, right?
Right. It was the one thing I could control, like, you know, thinking about other, maybe an eating disorder or something where a person feels like, well, this is the only thing I can control. I can control what I eat. I can control germs, I thought.
Yeah, germs, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
I'm not going to get sick because I see how much she would lose it when my sister got sick. So I said, very judgmental. I think in anxiety, I think it's some inheritable genetic component.
Definitely.
So I think my mom's a pretty anxious person, but she would never say it's anxiety.
Right. Often people that are either angry or just lose their patience or whatever are actually quite anxious. They're quite anxious. And that's their sort of way of dealing with it, is to fight, you know, like to be more controlling, like literally controlling people, as opposed to we're just silently controlling this thing inside our own bodies, you know. But it's two sides of a coin, it really is. So it helps us to empathize with other people, because even the angry people have got something going on, you know, they've got something happening. So well, you've been just a delightful guest to have, Sakina. Like, it's just so neat to hear this story and how you just plugged away and plugged away at it over the years. And, you know, it's kind of been up and down a little bit, but you certainly are a person with a lot of determination and perseverance with all of your education. Yeah, I mean, you went all kinds of places to get that education, and that's just absolutely amazing. I'm sure that your clients are very lucky people to be talking to you. You're very warm individual, just looking at you. You have a nice warm appearance, and talking to you as well. So yeah, great. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to me today.
Okay. I appreciate it.